the NFL podcast is an early season MVP favorite.
What? That makes no sense. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys? Ricky Hollywood, I know we're not to the offseason yet. We're edging there. That doesn't check out, that money drop. Come on in, Erica.
This is what listeners try to do when they think they're funny and clever and picking up
on
stuff.
You're the one that's choosing the thing.
Hey, so the listeners under the bus.
I mean, do you think I would write that? Mine would clearly be all about me.
You can choose by a million
of it.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I mean, I think that it's fair to say that maybe some of us are in heading towards off season mode, and that's okay. If you're one of those people.
I think there's two people on the show right now based on the tone of Mark's comment.
I would claim one, and it wouldn't necessarily be myself, but you know, there's no more to say because I'll just suffer for even having voiced this.
Do you want to walk it back now at all before I
didn't claim who I was putting in that world. So you can't, no one should be offended. You should think it's the other two people I'm talking about.
Yes. If you do want to send in money tags, please do it. Or send it Erica Tamposi over on Twitter, and you could be a part of the show. Yes, this is the Championship Sunday preview edition of the Around the NFL podcast. It's a good one, boys. Oh, it's a good one because we have guests galore to talk the NFC title game between the Packers and Bucks. We'll have Colleen Wolfe, old friend of the show, who's hasn't been on in a minute, as they say. So she's rejoining us. Can't wait for that. And for the first time, Bill Barnwell from ESPN.com. He does great work over in the NFL coverage for that particular website. He will join us to talk the AFC title game between the Chiefs and the Bills. We also have some news to get through. We'll kind of stick that right in the middle, halftime style. This feels like, Greg, a show not to be missed if you are a football junkie.
It's a cracker. You know, sometimes you get to these championship weekends, some teams, they don't really feel like they belong. Like last year's Packers team, okay, it's like you tried to convince yourself it's Aaron Rodgers, but it's like even the Titans last year. These four teams, I'm saying, like, I could see any one of them winning the Super Bowl. It's some good box office stuff.
That's a good call. Like, Raheem Mostert isn't going to go off for 237-4 on some overmatched wannabe contender. Right. I'm with you. This is going to be great football. Let's get into it. Yes, and let's start with the AFC title game. I mean, this is fun. It's championship weekend. And because it's championship weekend and because Tom Brady is playing against Patrick Mahomes, we had to get, you know, an extra special guest to join us. I believe him to be, and I know I'm not alone on this podcast, one of the great football writers out there. And he writes for ESPN, and his name is Bill Barnwell. And now he is joining us for the first time on the ATN podcast to break down the AFC title game. Bill, welcome to the show.
Ooh. Oh, this is very spooky. It feels strange that it hasn't happened before, right?
Yeah, it's overdue. It's overdue. Right. I've known Bill a long time since, like, he was at Football Outsiders, and they would do, like, events speaking at bars in New York City in around 2008, which is about the time he really wore that I'm a Giants fan thing loudly.
It's funny to me because Bill and Greg, in some ways, like, do a similar job for NFL media and ESPN. So it's almost like two titans of the genre, Mark, on the same show right now, and here we are just standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just along for the ride. I couldn't be more pleased. I shared with you guys the one time that I met Bill for 4 or 5 seconds, and that was a meeting that went sideways. We won't get into that on this show, but I'm thrilled that he's here.
You know, we just went through a whole windup before we started taping, Mark, about how that individual who, you know, will remain nameless, we can never let that tape get out, and now you're actually referencing it on the show, and now I'm talking about you.
You've actually taken it about 15 yards further than I did, so. So thanks again.
All right, let's get on track here. We got Bill here, the great Barnwell. Are you, Bill, you're one of those guys that people call you by Barnwell mostly, or Bill?
That's a good question. I would say, like, college era, Barnwell most commonly. I would say now I feel like I get more Bills than Barnwell. If I, like, flip my hat backwards, maybe I get more Barnwell.
You ever get, like, a hey, Barney, you know?
That would be someone where I would try to walk away from them. I feel like any sort of shortening that ends in Y, unless you're a hockey player, is not okay.
That's fair.
Good coda.
Let's start this way, Bill, because the Chiefs survive by the skin of their teeth against the Browns, and you know they do that with the help of Chad Henne and a very huge onion hanger of a call there by Andy Reid, and hopefully they get Mahomes back now. Now, on the other side, with the Bills, they have been outgained in each of their playoff games. Their defense obviously stepped up in a big spot against the Ravens and carried the day there. How concerned are you about the fact that the Bills offense is no longer running teams out of the building like they were in December? And how much do you think do they need to return to that form to have a chance this weekend?
It's complicated. I think there's a couple of things in play here. I thought they were pretty good against the Colts, right? I mean, the Colts were a good defense, maybe not top five, but they were very good against the Colts, especially after halftime, once they stopped getting stuck with 90, 92, 93 yards to go for touchdowns. The Ravens were a very tough defense, and they did a really good job against Josh Allen and the Bills. But I think something has to change, because this formula that they've won these first two games with is not sustainable. They have been incredible in the red zone for a defense that was, I think, the fifth worst defense in football in the red zone during the regular season, which is not a sticky stat, but there's no reason why they suddenly should turn into, you know, the 2000 Ravens in the red zone, where they've given up, I think, two touchdowns now in eight possessions. I believe it was, you know, a missed field goal. It was two stops on downs, that fourth down against the Colts, and then, of course, a fourth down late against the Ravens, the pick six. I mean, you can't count on that happening. And we saw last year with Tennessee, which was a team that was great on offense in the red zone, and then in their upset victories against the Ravens and against the Patriots, were 2 of 7 in the red zone in terms of allowing touchdowns. You face the Chiefs, that's a different level of team in the red zone. So Tennessee was not able to be as effective in the red zone, and we saw that formula kind of fell apart. So for the Bills, I think either they have to get stiffer on defense, you know, outside of the red zone, or have that offense come back that was, you know, dominant over the second half of the season, because I think they can't count on holding the Chiefs to scoring touchdowns 25% of the time in the red zone come Sunday.
I'm really curious how the Chiefs will play them, because you know, the Ravens were interesting. They're such a heavy blitz team. Mm-hmm. They didn't really blitz Allen. Their four guys that were up front were not getting anywhere close to him. The Bills' offensive line has been a great story for them. They've really improved and now one of the best groups, I think, in the league. Mm-hmm. And it kind of worked. You know, you made Josh Allen hold the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And it's the opposite of what the Chiefs did the first time around, and kind of how they're generally programmed. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of heat on Josh Allen the first time around. I did go back to watch that, and it was dangerous. And I think it's going to be dangerous to do it again, because unlike the Ravens, they don't have great players in the back end. And they sent a lot of pressure at Josh Allen. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But, man, guys were open deep down the field. Rewatching that game, it was a lot closer than I remembered. I sort of thought of it as this steamrolling by the Chiefs, but man, there were a lot of opportunities for Allen to make plays. And I guess I would be afraid if I'm the Chiefs of basically every matchup on the field. Like Stephon Diggs to me is, I think, the best receiver in the league. I'd take him even over Adams. If Beasley is Beasley, then you have, you know, Dawson Knox is like everything's a mismatch, and I could see them hitting a lot of big plays if they go that balls out this week.
From one film guy to another, I appreciate that, because I also went back and watched the Bills-Chiefs game.
Dan's going to make fun of you for that film reference there. Here,
I know. I went back and watched it, and Josh Allen missed some throws. Like, there were plays to be made on the offense in that game, and there were throws maybe, you know, the Chiefs were able to make a great play to knock a pass away deep, or, you know, Josh Allen missed a receiver by a step because he was under some pressure. I don't know what you guys think, but looking at how the Chiefs played the Bills in that game, or sorry, how the Bills played the Chiefs in that game on offense, they played too high. They took away the deep plays. They said, hey, if you want to run the ball for 5 yards a carry, great, go nuts. We'll happily have you do that. And the Chiefs pretty much did that all game. I wonder if, from the Chiefs side of things, if they sort of say the same thing here and say, hey, we're going to play too deep. We're not going to blitz a lot. We're going to kind of do what the Ravens did and let you run the ball, or let you hit those short passes, at least theoretically give you the run, although the Bills obviously did not want to run in that game. But give them the opportunity to run the ball and say, hey, we'll get in a running game sort of, you know, like slot, like the just, you know, really slow paced game, if that's what you want, because we think we're going to be more efficient than you when it comes to scoring in the red zone.
I mean, I also look at the way the Bills handled or attempted to handle Patrick Mahomes in that game. They didn't blitz him once. And that was essentially, according to Next Gen Stats, like the first time that's happened in a game since 2016. And that, you know, that helped them get to 245 yards on the ground, Kansas City. I mean, if you're Buffalo, because the obviously, you know, I love that everyone's like, that game just doesn't matter at all. We throw it out entirely. Well, there are like, there is some shared DNA, obviously, with what happened back then. And like, if you're Buffalo, you kind of showed what you wanted to do the first time. It didn't really work the way that they wanted it to. How do you come in and like, do you, especially with Patrick Mahomes, I get the head thing is probably fine, but the toe injury I thought last week really affected him. And those don't necessarily just go away in 4 or 5 days. If you're Buffalo, do you take a few chances and just say, we might pay the price, but we have got to try to make Patrick Mahomes on that toe uncomfortable? Because I thought it affected his throws last week for sure.
Yeah, you got to see, because his legs, I think it's so underrated what a big part of their offense it is, especially in the playoffs, buying time and picking up like 5 yards or picking up key first downs. Like, he reminds me so much of Andrew Luck. He's not as good a runner, but just when he runs, it's like always devastating. And if you take that away from them, then the Chiefs offense is like goes from totally unstoppable to like, you know, slightly less than totally unstoppable.
Mostly unstoppable.
And they were aggressive last year in the postseason about using Mahomes as a runner in the red zone. I mean, they ran speed options last year in the red zone. They ran Mahomes.
They did last week. I mean, that's the reason he got hurt. That's the reason he got hurt.
Exactly. They did it last week and Mahomes got hurt. So you got to figure, I mean, Andy Reid has guts. I don't know if he has the same guts to call another speed option with Patrick Mahomes after what happened last week.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not too. So that may impact their efficiency in the red zone as well.
Much has been made of it. But I think when you actually look at the Chiefs' schedule this season, it is fairly remarkable that, you know, they've won basically every week since week 5, with the exception of a week 17 loss that didn't matter. And those wins but are by since the bye, 2-4, 3-6, 6-3, 3-3, the loss, and then they beat Cleveland by 5.
Crazy.
Obviously, you kind of throw out the game against Cleveland on some level because Mahomes gets hurt. But even then, I think that game was had a good chance of ending up close either way. Yeah. How much have you put into that, that the offense isn't quite as explosive? They're not running people out of the buildings themselves like they were at their peak a season ago.
I think it's meaningful. I mean, I think that I'm, you know, I always love quoting record in close games as being a sign that a team is garbage and not actually any good. I don't know if I'd say that about the Chiefs, but I do think that they are not as good as their record seems to indicate. And I think that, you know, last year, the reason they were able to turn things on in the playoffs, the reason they were able to just, you know, absolutely just make those phenomenal comebacks and just blow away teams when they got hot is that they were incredible in the red zone. They were like 13 of 14 scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And I, you know, you kind of thought, okay, well, maybe they'll turn it back on again in the playoffs because they weren't that team again during the regular season. And they weren't against the Browns. They kicked field goals against the Browns. They did stall out against the Browns. And they, of course, Harrison Butker didn't miss a field goal, which didn't help matters, but it wasn't like they were, you know, they were moving the ball, but it wasn't like they were dominating inside the 20. And so I think that's why so much of this game to me comes down to what happens in the red zone, because I think, you know, I don't think this offense is cooking at the level where I think they can hit 4 or 5 50-yard plays, especially against the Bills team that not really this year, but more so in years past, was very good about avoiding those big plays and really focusing on taking away those big plays from opposing offenses. So, you know, maybe I'll be wrong. Obviously, they have the upside to do it, but we just haven't seen that offense where it's been Patrick Mahomes just hitting bomb after bomb after bomb. This has been an offense that's really been about protecting the football, not making mistakes, and just wearing teams down with completion after completion and third down conversion after third down conversion.
But like, here's the thing that I'm struggling to make sense of, because I feel like it's still more or less the same cast. You still have the same play caller. Patrick Mahomes is still there. You still have Tyreek Hill. You have Travis Kelce. What is different? Maybe it's up front. I know they had Clyde Edwards-Helaire that we, on balance, think made the offense better, but now he's out of the picture anyway, potentially. Like, why aren't they that way? Because I don't see a huge difference personnel-wise.
They're not the same, though. I think that's been underrated. Like, A, they lost their best offensive lineman Mitchell Schwartz. He's not coming back. And then last week, imagine if any other team in the playoffs went into the playoffs without their number two wide receiver, who, by the way, has like the best playoff track record of any receiver of the last 5 years, Sammy Watkins, and without their number one draft pick, who's also their starting running back and gives them a lot extra juice. People would say, oh, that team's like a little banged up. But the Chiefs, it feels like it doesn't really matter. It's the Chiefs. And I get that they're like 3 and 4 on the pecking order, and they're way less important than Kelsey, who's just like on another level right now, and Tyreek Hill. But those two guys really matter. And those two guys might be playing this week. They are practicing. It sounds like Edwards-Helaire might play. If I'm a Chiefs fan, I love that Darrell Williams had a nice game last week because their running game has been so bad. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that'll help them out to be balanced. If they are not balanced, but I just mean when they hand it off to get 6 or 7 yards and Edwards-Helaire returning and Watkins returning, like I think that would make a big deal.
Okay.
I'm obligated by our friend Evan Silva to call Darrell Williams the mentor to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's a good name.
Mentor. He's fine.
I do think the offensive line is a legitimate concern. Losing Mitchell Schwartz is a huge problem. I mean, it didn't affect them as much against the Browns as I would have expected because they did really do they really put a lot of pressure on Myles Garrett in the first half with reading him and, you know, running those jet sweeps past him to slow him down. And then he got hurt and wasn't the same player in the second half of the game, wasn't available even for chunks of the second half of that game. And they're not very good in the interior. Their guards aren't all that effective. Eric Fisher is okay at left tackle. I mean, this is a team where you can beat them up front, and we know that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is going to make plays against pressure, but you'd still rather have him with, you know, a clean pocket. You'd still rather have him be able to, you know, drop back and make plays without having to run the ball for 10, 11 seconds to try and find an open receiver. So I do think that the rest of the team around that core is not the same as it was a year ago.
I mean, I think it's big to have Matt Milano back in the Travis Kelce conversation. He wasn't there the first time. I still look at this offense, and it, you know, the Browns are a completely different defense, but it's like maybe you bottle up Tyreek Hill for a bit, but then Travis Kelce goes nuts. The Bills have to have an answer for that. I just want to see also, because one of my favorite things that happened last weekend was the Bills. It was like one of these box score phenomenons that just delighted me. It's you got 3 minutes to go in the first half, and there has been one run by the Bills, and it's been Josh Allen. And it's like, I kind of think it's like what you do if you, they were just being real. And like, I wasn't a game where I thought that Allen and Daboll were in sync early on and the way that we've seen to some degree, but they just kind of went for it and said, F our running game. We're just going to throw the ball left and right. I don't know if they really are a team that can get back to balance. Devin Singletary can do some things to damage.
Like, isn't that with them? It was more extreme, obviously, this past week because it was just ridiculous that they didn't have any running plays. But when they were scoring 40 points every week, when they were coming down the stretch like a fireball, they weren't running the ball a lot then either because they didn't have to because Allen was out of his mind and making plays with his legs as well. So I have seen that pop up in place. I know you're not saying that, Mark, but that, oh, the Bills, maybe they need to get some balance to get their offense cooking again.
I don't think they should go balance because the
that's
Chiefs.
That's what I mean. I don't think you're saying
the Chiefs
that,
have been one of the better teams to shut down explosive run plays, but they are about like 24th in the NFL against explosive pass plays. So if you're Buffalo, go with who you are at this point. I don't know why you try to change.
I wonder if like Daboll though kind of takes what they give him, you know, and Allen, if there's a difference here, maybe to me, the story of Mahomes' season is that sort of like next level of maturation and patience of like, he'll just take the 7 yard gain when it's there. There was a lot of that against Cleveland. Certainly there was a lot. It kind of started in week one, you know, that Texans game and then the Bills game. Like, to me, that's part of the story of the Chiefs this year. I don't know if Allen and the Bills are there yet. I kind of don't think either defense is going to get many stops. But to me, that is like the slight difference is maybe Reed and Mahomes are a little more patient, that they'll take what's given. And I almost forgot that we need to do this on this show, but that is why I'm going to lock up the old Chiefs. And I know Mark's got to just go against me because that's just what he's going
to
do.
He has to in the lock competition. That's where we're at now. It's getting tight. So
I'm one up on Mark. The other guys are all out of it. I'm one up on Mark entering the last 2 weeks. So at some point, he's got to make a move and go against me here.
You have to.
I will lock up the Bills because there's only 2 more weeks to do this, but I had a thought of maybe locking up a different team that I thought was a cinch this week and then hoping that Greg falls off. But let's just do the old lock off.
Why not? Okay. Beautiful. I mean, you can do it that
way. Hey, Bill,
Not Barney, not Barnwell, Bill. Is it too late for me to throw out the old, I know an X factor for the Bills, John Smoke Brown? Are we giving up on him ever making a big impact? Because this could hypothetically is a game where he can be a difference maker if we believe that he can get right physically.
We have a Chiefs team here that we know are aggressive in the secondary. We know that whether it's Tyrann Mathieu, whether it's their corners, they're going to go for plays. They are susceptible at times to double moves. Now, they have the athletic ability to catch up and make plays, but if you have a guy who is an incredible deep passer in Josh Allen, and you have a guy in John Brown who can get open, wouldn't it be crazy? I mean,
made good plays last week, John Brown.
He was there. He was active. He was making plays. He looked healthy. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out in the slightest. We've seen Sammy Watkins last year, where he was a non-factor for most of the season after week one. And then suddenly in the postseason, who has the big play to seal up the AFC Championship game? It's Sammy Watkins. Who has the play, the Darrell Revis fantasy play, where he stacks Richard Sherman and goes for a 40-yard gain? It's Sammy Watkins. So I don't think you can rule anything out with John Brown based on how he played earlier this season.
I mean, that we've watched like 20 plus of these championship games, 30, and it's like there's always unsuspecting characters that pop up in the final 5 to 6 minutes of these games who are etched in history, and it's not someone that we're probably spending this week talking about. It'll be a defensive back, the fourth defensive back on one of these teams.
I think it could be the receiver depth, because like if Watkins returns, I think that helps them, or DeMarcus Robinson, whatever it is. I love the Matt, like, I'd be a little worried, you know, if I'm a Bills fan or a Chiefs fan, like the depth at cornerback for both teams is pretty weak. We don't know if Bashaud Breeland's playing. Tre'Davious White, sneaky, has struggled about 2 or 3 straight weeks. So like if your best player is struggling, whether he's matched up against Kelce or Hill, like then it goes down to our old Sky Sports colleague, Josh Norman. Are you going to trust him one-on-one? I don't know, in a big spot. Or it's the other way around. It's like Gabe Davis versus some of these Chiefs cornerbacks. I don't know. I think I'm just wishful thinking, because whether it's the Chiefs or not, I just want a lot of points. And by the way, if Chad Henne starts this game, I'm changing my lock. That's allowed. I'll probably
That's not a lock.
Well, yeah. Then I flip it right to the Bills, probably, if Chad Henne's
all right. I won't be flipping to the Chiefs in a lock off in that scenario.
Yeah, I could see a Josh Norman pass interference penalty having a big role in this game somehow.
Yeah.
And you
can I ask you guys one question?
Go ahead, Bill.
Please.
Conspiracy theory-esque question. Now, there have been people who have said during the second half of the season, oh, the Chiefs are just saving their money plays. They're saving their creativity for the postseason. That's why the offense is so boring. Did we see enough last week early in that game, or do you think they're possibly saving it for this game or the Super Bowl? Do you think Andy Reid still has stuff in the tank, and Eric Bieniemy still has stuff in the tank that we haven't seen this year?
Yes.
You do? Okay, I like that. I think pretty much every time we say that about an NFL team, they do not have the patience or the...
I don't think they've been saving it, but Andy Reid always comes up with something.
It's Andy Reid is probably like, you know, hunched over a napkin right now, coming up with something that no one's seen before. Just because it's Andy Reid. If you said this about, like, you know, some other, you know, trash bag team, like, do I think the Detroit Lions are saving things on a week-to-week basis? I don't think that they've figured out the fundamental playbook to begin with. Kansas City and Andy Reid, totally different situation.
How about this, Mark? Alternate reality as a Browns fan. Obviously, things didn't work out the way you wanted to last week. Patrick Mahomes stays healthy, and you still get back into the game, and then this trick play that they've had waiting, they kill you with like a minute and 14 seconds to play with a trick play that becomes legendary. Look at it that way. You might have lost the game last week, but it could have been a heart-wrenching loss with that hidden trick play coming out.
That's possible. I think if Mahomes had played that whole game with the way Cleveland's defense is, that would have been like a 45-point output. And I'd still think Kansas City tried to show as little as they could against the Browns.
No, I don't know if they're saving up, but man, never doubt me some Andy Reid.
Mark, you were saying on this show last week that people don't see what's happening with the Browns and there's something special going on here. You can't now say it was going to be a 40-burger drop.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that was before the game. The way that I watched, you know, that start to take place, I'm confident they would have scored 40. I also said that none of us know anything, and most of what we say turns out to be wrong. So
it's true. Yeah. Bill, before we let you go, I would love a pick for both games this weekend, and then plug what you're up to other than your fine work on the ESPN.com.
I will go Chiefs. Sorry, Mark.
It's okay. You've kind of been a Bills guy.
Awkward.
Yeah. I will go Bucks. I will say the Bucks heat up Aaron Rodgers enough to win that game.
Ooh. Mm.
And the Bill Barnwell show, you know, your podcast, check it out.
That's true.
If he's not going to pump himself up, we got to do it. Last time I saw Bill was at the combine, and we went to dinner with someone who wouldn't shake our hands and said we should not be hugging because of coronavirus. And they were right. And Bill and I were kind of like, oh, come on. You're taking a little
was it like Dr. Fauci?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was
this? Like, you're on top of it.
It was Dr. Anthony.
It was. I was like, you're right. You're right.
He was also like, surprisingly during that dinner, a real tape dog. That's the term we use. We don't watch film around here, Bill. We are tape dogs. We tape dog it. All right, Bill Barnwell, thank you so much, buddy. It was a long time coming, and you did not disappoint. Best wishes and stay well, my friend.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Thank you.
There he goes, Bill Barnwell, really breaking it down, as he always does. Before we get to Colleen Wolfe and the NFC title game, boys, let's hit some news.
He's terrifying now, 57 sparring. He's the new Clowney. Hey, you don't play Mike. Why would you line up there?
Right here.
Right here. Right here. Put your hands up. Tell everybody you made the play. Like last. Put your hands up. Tell everybody. Well, he took it off. He took it off. That's technique. If his helmet came off, that's a penalty.
Run! Hey, run! Run! Run!
Quit just making up alerts. You're like, you hear things. You scream. Reverse. You don't know what's coming.
One of the great trash talkers, wholesome trash talker. He's like a Daniel Jeremiah of the football field, where he's going to come at you with fangs, but he's not going to be foul-mouthed about it. No. A lot of dagagummit and things of that nature. Philip Rivers, what a personality, what a player. And he is now an ex-player. Philip Rivers announced this week he's retiring from the NFL. That ends a 17-year career. One of the great passers in history, a unique player in, yes, both his personality and his ability to procreate with his wife Tiffany, and also with that amazing sidearm delivery, just funky looking, and it didn't look like it should work, but damn did it work for almost 64,000 passing yards, ranked fifth in NFL history. Greg, he was always a favorite of yours, and I'm curious about your thoughts, but let's start here. Are you surprised? Because it surprised me. I didn't think there was any way he was walking off that year with the Colts. Maybe there's more to the story than we know about conversations he had with front office officials in Indianapolis. Are you surprised this is the end of the road for Phil Rivers?
I am, just because he so clearly loves his job so much. But then when I read the explanation that it's been his lifelong dream to coach high school football, you usually would read that and think like, oh, that's just something athletes would say. Like, I believe it. It probably is his lifelong dream, and he sees his sons in seventh grade now. He wants to get going with that program that he's the head coach of now in Alabama. Like, and I buy it that he's just like – he's also probably feeling like he's not – he's going out on a relative high note. I know they lost, but I thought he played well this year. He showed he can still play, and it doesn't feel like you're dragging him off the field. Like, I think he'll have a good memory of his time in Indianapolis.
I, like, had the pleasure of driving around yesterday and speaking to Matt Money Smith. You know, obviously, as the play-by-play guy for the Chargers, he got to know Philip Rivers really well. And the way he spoke about him, I think it's just Philip Rivers, the person, the experience of who he is. He's a throwback. You know, all these guys are getting drafted today. They come in, they're ready to roll. But there are not a lot of Philip Rivers personalities out there. And it's the dad humor with a little bit of an edge, but no profanity. It's, I think, one of the most determined, fiery players out there. It was just a joy to watch him on that front. And it's, you know, when he went to North Carolina State in high school, they didn't want him to be a quarterback in the college level because of his throwing motion, which has been one of his, you know, something that's tagged him forever, and he's still got it done. I just, it's whenever these guys who've been around for as long as we've really hardcore been watching football retire, it just makes you remember how much you've aged yourself, because we've been watching him since 2004. And this is a guy, you know, we get all, there's all these quarterbacks that come in, and hey, if this guy can stay healthy, you know, then he can be productive. He reaches potential. Philip Rivers is, like Eli Manning and others, the classic definition of an Iron Man. I mean, you could not keep this guy out of the lineup, and that rises franchise when you have a signal caller like that that refuses to not suit up.
He's a rock. And you brought up Matt Money Smith, who I do the Power Ranking show with on NFL Network. And we were talking, one of the segments on our most recent episode was I did a Power Rankings of what are going to be the big offseason narratives to track. And one of them was, what are the Colts going to do with Phillip Rivers? A day later, we found out that's already been decided. But I thought it was interesting, and we're interested in these things, that Money, who's, you know, top broadcaster, who knows Rivers, and understands the mechanics of the gig, says that if Phil Rivers goes into a broadcast booth, he would be not just Tony Romo level. He thinks he could be better than Tony Romo. And you wonder if his future in a calling is in that Monday Night Football booth, if he can make that work. And Money seems to think he could, with his scheduling as a football coach in high school with a Monday night gig. That is a really interesting thought, and it probably would pay him not the same money as what he would make as a pro quarterback, Greg, but if he's as good as Romo, he'd get paid like a superstar in our industry.
He could buy the entire high school conference that they're in with the money Monday Night Football.
I think it is a prep school. Yeah, maybe like the Friday night games, and then you have Monday night. It seems possible. Like, and that would be great, because it's part of the reason I loved him. Like, I think of Wes here. I think he liked Rivers, and he talks about just like characters. I think Wes, it's one of the reasons why it's fun to go to a party at Wes's house or visit his friends in Tybee. Like, Wes likes characters. And to me, like, Rivers wasn't the best quarterback of his generation, but he was such a character. No one threw it like him. He's so aggressive, fun to watch. The trash talking you mentioned, but like the fact that the way he would trash talk would be like pointing out to the defensive players that they're doing something wrong because he knows their defense so well. Like, that's a special sort of trash talk. And then you like listen to every player that played with him, whether it's offense, defense, whatever. Man, they all love Phillip Rivers. I don't think that's fake. And I think of course, like, everyone is going to respect their quarterback and everything, but I think it's like another level. And he was underrated. Like, I really believe the lack of an offensive line and a defense and a running game for so much of his career overshadows that. For most of those seasons, if you ranked where he was at quarterback at the end of the season, it was so often in the top 5 or 6. And that, to me, is the best way to measure a guy, is over the course of a regular season. And so when you compare him to those 04 guys like Roethlisberger and Eli, like, I do think he was like a little underrated, and he's definitely a stats guy. I get it, but he was awesome, man. No one like had that mid range game. He had like an old man game from the minute he was in the league. It was different.
This is a quote from Rivers. Every year, January 20th is a special and emotional day. He said that's when the day he retired. It is Saint Sebastian's feast day in the Roman Catholic faith. He is the patron saint of the athlete. It is also the day I played in the AFC Championship without an ACL. And now that after 17 seasons, I'm announcing my retirement from the National Football League. Great. I think he's a Hall of Famer. You really wish he had one deep run in the playoffs that took him to a Super Bowl. He never got there. Even, you know, I talked about it, Mark, in the elimination game this year. You know, he just misses the touchdown pass in the end zone on that fourth down. It to me, kind of like spoke the story of his career. Always so close to having that moment that then would propel the team. It just never happened. So you could, I guess, ding him ultimately for the January record, although you can't put everything on the quarterback. But overall, great player, great producer, a rock in terms of staying in the lineup, and just a fun guy to cover. What else can you ask for?
I think he is a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's a lot of interesting cases coming up. But if you look at some of the quarterbacks that are in the NFL, in the Hall of Fame, like, they didn't all go to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a team sport. He'd get my vote.
That freaking ACL, man. If that 07 Patriots team, not that I would have wanted it to happen, but I think they were ripe to be picked off there. And they were very competitive in that game if you had a healthier Phillip Rivers and Tomlinson in that game.
Some real bad blood between those Patriots and Chargers teams back then. All right, so good luck to whatever comes next, Phil Rivers. I feel like you're still going to be on our radar sooner rather than later. Moving on, the Detroit Lions introduced Dan Campbell as their new head coach after signing to that 6-year contract, and this is just fun. Let's listen to the opening remarks from Campbell in his press conference with the media on Thursday.
So this team's going to be built on We're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing.
Mark, are you surprised with the hire of Stone Cold Steve Austin as the head coach of the Lions?
I feel like the NFL is already investigating his opening press conference probably for some of the things he promised to do. But, I mean, what I was surprised by was a six-year contract. Sight unseen, this isn't like hiring Bill Parcells part two. And so this, to me, you know, look at I like this story already. I mean, there's a lot to like. If it goes well, I feel like it's going to go really, really well, or it's not going to play at all. And like it's because of that's his personality. Does this register? And what's the rest of him about? I like the whole idea of it, but it's a huge wait and see for me. But they're showing tremendous faith with a 6-year deal.
Yeah, I just love that he's going to be part of our lives. I mean, maybe biting people's kneecaps off is like the new Moneyball. Like, that's the way to get an advantage in the NFL. Just
I don't think so.
bite some kneecaps. It's just funny because they hired Chris Spielman, and I really like Chris Spielman as an analyst on Fox. He was actually one of my favorites, even if I didn't always agree with him. But they basically hired Chris Spielman to like hire another version of Chris Spielman, because that's sort of how Chris Spielman talks, is like this ultimate macho tough guy. I love that he's just this huge, like Miami Beach looking bodybuilder type, but like packed into this suit, you know, but he kind of talks and looks like Jeff Bridges. I think it was Rotopad who pointed that out. Like he talks like the dude, like everything about it's great. I don't know if any of it's going to work. He hired Aaron Glenn, who a lot of people really like as defensive coordinator. And he did say some things in that press conference about their offensive philosophy that was much more about like what the Saints do and matchup based. And I thought intelligent that, you know, that didn't get as much play. But I think, you know, he's a Saints coach, so he's going to take a lot of what they did and try to apply it.
In other news, sad news to report out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, former Packers general manager Ted Thompson, the man who drafted Aaron Rodgers in his first draft in charge at Green Bay, traded away Brett Favre, helped build that championship team that won Super Bowl 45. He has died, sadly. Matt LaFleur, the head coach, alerted the media. 68 years old, just 68, Ted Thompson. Played 10 seasons in the NFL in the 70s into the 80s. Was the GM for Green Bay from 2005 through 2017. He moved into a consultant role starting in 2018 because of declining health. And now we learn that he has passed away. Very sad. And I will just share a memory I had. You know, this is the first year we're not going to the combine in a decade. And I used to love the Ted Thompson press conferences at the combine. I wrote back in 2016, which was his second to last year on the job as GM. I wrote on NFL.com, if Mitch Hedberg were reincarnated as a prominent front office official in the NFL, he'd be Ted Thompson. He had a dry wit and a subtle sense of humor, and it kind of undercut the rigidness of the NFL machine around him, especially in that setting at the combine. He didn't take anything too seriously, but at the same time, he was very serious about his business, which included building teams through the draft, Mark. He was all about the draft, famously didn't like to sign pricey free agents. That was his mantra, and it helped the Packers having him in charge all those years.
I mean, the greatest thing about those combine pressers where they were trying to press Ted Thompson to finally acknowledge that he might dip into free agency and make a big splash, and he just completely ignored the concept of that. I mean, he zigged when everyone else was zagging when it came to that part of the offseason, and it worked. I think the one thing that these general managers have this incredible power at is you completely have the ability to change a franchise forever. And who had a bigger imprint? I mean, the Packers have had a number of great general managers, but in the Rodgers era, I mean, it's all about Ted Thompson, and they have a whole different philosophy now, but he was very memorable and is a huge part of what Green Bay did.
Well, he's a huge part of this team, too. You know, he drafted Davante Adams. He drafted Corey Linsley, their all-pro center. He drafted Kenny Clark. He drafted Dean Lowry, who's still playing for them. He drafted Aaron Jones, you know. And then I think he'll always be remembered more than anything as the guy who drafted Aaron Rodgers, even though Favre was there. It's definitely sad, but he was one of the – you know, one of the best to do it. If anything, like, he was so loyal to Mike McCarthy. I always wanted to see, you know, that was always a conversation on our podcast. Well, I would like to see Rodgers with a different coach, and you know, now you see it. And but it was his organization more than anyone, Ted Thompson. It's crazy how many of those players. It's not like that on many other teams, actually, that you have that many players going back that far. So it goes to show they wouldn't be here right now without him.
Yes, Ted Thompson passes away at the age of 68. Rest in peace. In other news, Dwayne Haskins looks like he's about to get another job. It's out there, a report from – where is this report from?
It's official now.
It's now official. It's officially official.
As we taped.
Initially reported it, but now it's a done deal that the Pittsburgh Steelers have signed Dwayne Haskins as a free agent. This is a Steelers team, Mark, that has some uncertainty at quarterback in their future. You have an old man in Ben Roethlisberger. And by the way, look, now let's take a look at this. Phil Rivers, retired. Eli Manning, long retired. The third in the big trio of the 2004 draft picks, Ben Roethlisberger. Now the last man standing, Mason Rudolph, not a great backup quarterback. I guess the thought here is that Mike Tomlin and his staff can turn Dwayne Haskins into a professional quarterback that maybe could be the future at the position.
Well, I just can't help but wonder if the Roethlisberger announcement is pending or coming soon. I'm just watching the way that he shed tears at the end of that game. It had nothing to do with that one game. I think it had to do with a lot more weight that he was pondering at the time. I mean, for me, there were a lot of Steelers fans during the season saying, when Haskins is let go, and it just was the tea leaves were there, that he was someone a lot of Steelers fans wanted. I mean, Big Ben came from Ohio and tortured Ohio teams forever. Haskins, Ohio State, that would be a nice narrative to continue. I mean, it's a project, but it's a much better environment, I think, for Dwayne Haskins. We will see. I think he does some things really well. I don't think you'd view him as a starter, but it could be like we're going to stock up on quarterbacks because Big Ben is out the door.
I'm surprised how many Steelers fans and seem to want Roethlisberger to retire. I know he wasn't playing his best.
It's recency bias based on those last 6 weeks. Yeah.
And Fichtner, you know, their offensive coordinator, got let go or didn't renew his contract. That supposedly, you know, Roethlisberger wasn't going to be fired up about that. But they did promote Matt Canada, who had been there. I don't know how that affects it. I do think maybe we're due for some like quarterback retirement drama. Haven't had a lot of that lately, you know. I think Ben is the man to do it. You know, like, is he going to do it? Is he not? Yes, I'm retiring, but then he changes his mind 2 months later. Let's do it, Ben.
Favre-like. He could go. Ted Thompson had a deal for years with Brett Favre.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Can't wait to track that all offseason.
And finally in the news, this just went down, and it's a big deal for the Eagles and all the fans out there. And speaking of Eagles fans, she wasn't scheduled to join us for a few minutes to dig in on the NFC title game. But since the Eagles have zeroed in on a new head coach, let's bring her on a little bit early. The great Tiny Box, Connie Fox, Colleen Wolf, welcome to the show.
What's up? Hi, great to see you guys. Love to see all your faces, and I really just love to hear this song. So I'm just trying to come on as many times as I can to hear it.
Turn that up in my headphones.
I feel cooler.
I mean,
after I listen to it.
It's a new day in Philadelphia. There's a wolf.
It's a new day in America.
I have to figure out. I want to start driving around like the neighborhoods here, just like tearing it up with this song, just blaring. Maybe roof off. Who knows what's gonna happen?
What are the neighbors like around you right now?
They don't talk to me. I don't know any of them.
No, I've been in your neighborhood. I don't think that would play well down there, from what I've seen.
There's a lot of children.
Let's get into it, Connie.
You must fit right in.
Exactly.
The Eagles have a new football coach locked and loaded here, Connie. It is Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni, rap sheet Garofalo, Tom Pelissero report. I mean, I've been down this road before.
The
if
triumvirate.
We get to the point where we have three of the quote-unquote insiders on our network all sourced reporting on it, just make an NFL network. You don't get to use the names anymore. If I was in the newsroom, but I'm not and haven't been since March, and even if I was, it wouldn't matter. Doesn't matter. None of this matters. Doug Peterson is out, as we know, after that 4-11-1 campaign. So the Eagles make that surprise move to dump Peterson.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
And he's pissed off. He's probably taking a year off. But here is Nick Sirianni. Connie, we don't know much about Nick other than he was with Frank Reich, who's obviously that's a good guy to be working with and under. Your initial thoughts? Do you have any initial thoughts on what's going on with the Eagles here?
Well, this all just happened. So it's all pretty new, pretty fresh. We heard that obviously he was in the mix in terms of somebody that the Eagles were interested in, him and Josh McDaniels. So I guess this is better than Josh McDaniels, but I don't really know, because this guy, we've never seen him as a head coach before, first timer, and Philly is not exactly an easy place to be a first time any position, I think, anything, especially when everyone is judging and watching your every move. Plus, he inherits this quarterback situation, which I'm not sure how that's going to go down. It's pretty complicated. I feel like it's a messy situation, considering Howie Roseman, the GM, is clearly very married to Carson Wentz. I read an amazing article in the Inquirer that Jeff McClain had up about the giant poster that is plastered on Howie Roseman's wall in his office of Carson Wentz. So that just like kind of sets the table. Welcome to Philly, Nick.
Yeah. There you go. And just by a little way, you know, some background for listeners, he's 39 years old, Sirianni, came into the league as a quality control coach in Kansas City under Todd Haley in 2009, four seasons there, then moved up to wide receivers coach there, moves to San Diego, five seasons with the Chargers as their quality control coach. I don't know what that means. QB coach, wide receiver coach, and then he got the call to be the OC. Greg, for me, it's like, this is my initial thought, and I have, like we said, this is kind of a hire where you're going to have to wait it out and see whether this guy can play the guitar, if you will. But my whole thought when you dump Doug Peterson is like, you better get somebody in there that's going to inspire the troops and be an upgrade over the Super Bowl winning coach. And we'll see if he is. But again, with Peterson, it was maybe about Carson Wentz more than anything else.
Right. I think the reports, you know, that Eagles management, and they were doing it down in Florida. I like when the team does that. Come to my owner's huge mansion in Florida. We're going to do our interviews there. Like, we're not going back to that facility, like, in the middle of winter. Who do you think we are? I think the reports that say they basically told the coaches, like, you're going to work with Carson Wentz. Like, I think that was part of it. I mean, that you're – what's your plan for helping out Wentz and fixing this situation? So I think Sirianni, who worked with Frank Reich – you know, probably sold himself on that. He was not the play caller, though, in Indianapolis. You know, Frank Reich is. Sometimes some people think play calling is a little overrated. So he's a quarterback's guy, working with Rivers in San Diego and then Indianapolis with, you know, I guess a trio of quarterbacks, you know, Luck and Brissett and Rivers. It's a big gamble. It feels like it's like you have to get this one right for this brass. I think, you know, Howie specifically, they're attaching themselves to Wentz and Sirianni, and like, that's it. And if you're an Eagles fan, there's probably part of you that thinks like, you know, it felt like we kind of went with Andy Reid's guy for the last coach. We went with like Frank Reich's guy for this coach. You know, wouldn't it have been nice to just like keep Andy Reid or Frank Reich, I guess, like if they're the ones kind of picking our coaches.
Andy Reid.
Like Jalen Hurts, Mark, he, you know, he put a lot of good tape out there at the end of the season. So this feels like to me, Mark, that it could be a dangerous situation in terms of locker room chemistry and the locker room maybe being siding with one quarterback over the other. And now you insert this rookie head coach in, as Connie said, a volcanic market in Philadelphia. We'll see. This could be a tricky one.
It's the thorniest landing spot out there east of the Texans because of everything we've mentioned. And this is they still have the front office that drafted Jalen Hurts but has, you know, life-size posters of Carson Wentz in the general manager's
office. Yeah, that part of it's weird, right? I mean, they're the ones that drafted Hurts. Supposedly, I don't know. It's
well, right. And Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie are two peas in a pod. So I just think you come in. I think, number one, Doug Peterson seemed to lack the authority to hire his own staff to some degree over the past couple of years. And I think that was a – an issue between them and why they parted ways, that they wanted to change the way they did things. And now Sirianni comes in with the general manager and the owner completely linked and in a mind meld over Carson Wentz starting, when I would imagine most of the fan base is kind of done with Carson Wentz on some level after what you've seen from Jalen Hurts, who this team drafted highly and put themselves in this situation. So quite murky. If I'm Sirianni, I might want to be Doug Peterson and take the paid year off, but that's not an option for him.
Wow. All right. Okay. Colleen, is the Carson Wentz artwork or poster or whatever it is behind Howie Roseman the most troubling decor since the Alex Rodriguez Minotaur painting?
I never forget about that. Like, I have never, ever once forgotten about that. And it's really haunted me because at the time, I remember I was just dating. I wasn't married to John yet. And I remember how horrifying... Who?
John Ronald Gonzalez, born March 12, 1977, is an American sports writer who's married to NFL media broadcaster Colleen Wolf. John, who's a Pisces, resides in Los Angeles with his wife and two dogs.
The thought of just like walking into some guy's house that I just met and seeing that on the wall. Or, you know, not just met, but you know what I mean? Like, we've had a courtship.
Colleen just told
out
on herself.
Some checkpoints.
That would be single horrifying. Colleen. So thanks for bringing it up.
You
really
it.
Walked into that one.
And what a World Series ad against your Phillies in 2009. We can get into that too, maybe at some point on another show.
It's like John and I had just met 4 hours earlier.
I was there. I watched the Yankees clinch against the Phillies.
So straight. How have you
there?
Been?
I was there too.
I mean, how have I not been at that game?
Greg is at every historical event ever brought
He's
up.
Forrest Gump. All right.
And it's every afterwards, they just played on loop New York over and over and over. Tough. And we had to like tape raps and do interviews and everything. And they just didn't stop. So
I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I got out of there fairly quick. But I watched the little enjoyment for a couple minutes.
Tough stitch. All right, Connie.
Yes.
That's what's happening in the news. Let's now move to the NFC title game. And, you know, Colleen, love it. Can't wait to see Aaron Rodgers on the stage in his building against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and all the focus is on Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady. But as we know, in our league, in our sport, it's not actually those two guys like in ancient Rome with swords and shields fighting each other.
No, it is. It is.
Which would be cool. I would watch that. And I don't know who I'd pick to win that. We'll get to that later. It's actually, to me, the matchup I care more about is Aaron Rodgers and this offense that is so beautifully designed against the Tampa Bay defense, which just embarrassed Drew Brees in potentially his last game. How do you feel about Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay here? Do you think they're going to continue to roll offensively?
I do. I feel like if I was just going on gut, the whole time I have been with the Packers. Now, obviously, that did not happen week 6, and I have been labeled a Bucks hater for some reason all year long. So this must be something that is like actually happening. It has to be a theme. But I agree, because I almost feel like that week 6 game was just so weird, and it was such a bad performance for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in general, and everything came up the Bucks way. But it just seems like that was such a different team. And honestly, like in the NFL season, and especially now where I feel like that was so long ago. It feels like that was last season, week 6. And now this team, the Packers, the way that they came out even last week, 484 total yards of offense against this Rams defense. And I know that they didn't have a 100% Aaron Donald, and that obviously played a huge role in it. But the run game looked really good for the Packers. They were balanced. And then, of course, the Bucks coming off that game against the Saints, where they just got turnover after turnover. Like, this is going to be a little bit different for the Bucs defense going up against Aaron Rodgers. You're not going to have Drew Brees, who couldn't stretch the field at all. What, did he complete any passes over 20 yards? I think one, maybe. So it's going to be a lot different from last week and week 6.
The only thing that would concern me a little bit is that the Bucs have been great against the run. Vita Vea is coming back. And, you know, this was a team that selectively and effectively blitzed Rodgers at a higher rate than any team has back in week 6. So I know that a lot's changed. I'm with you. Our friend Nate Tice points out that this Packers offense right now, they are one of three teams since 2002 to average more than a field goal per drive. And the other two are the 2007 Patriots and the 2018 Chiefs. So it tells you that the Packers have grown into this. We spent all last week, Brandon Staley and the Rams defense, I think they might be good enough to go to the Super Bowl and shut everyone down. And then, like, within 15 minutes of that game starting, and I know that there were issues for the Rams in that game, it was like, no, that's not how football works in 2020 necessarily. So it's not just the Bucs defense. I mean, their offense is huge in this, but the Packers are not. I would be stunned if they duplicate that effort, because the Bucs were so effective against them. But the Bucs are going to have to be a little bit different this time around, and you can't fool Aaron Rodgers.
Well, the Bucs defense isn't as good as they were back then either. They started the season like a house on fire.
They were last week.
Yeah, they were, but that was against, I think, a compromised offense. You know, they weren't against Washington, gave up a lot of yards. They're such a boom or bust defense. That's just who they are. And you saw, like, the ultimate, like, boom situation in week six. But they give up big plays. It's all these young defensive backs who they have kind of playing man coverage and, like, stuck in one-on-one situations. So much of it, I think, is going to come down to, like, the most tiring topic of the Packers season, which is, like, Lazard and MVS. Like, at what point, and you just gave a great stat, one of the best three offenses in terms of scoring per drive in the last 20 years. Like, at what point will people shut up about them not drafting a receiver? At what level does the Packers offense need to be where that is a stupid point, where they're like, still can't believe they took a quarterback? It's like, you have the number one offense in the league by far.
There's another one, by the way, Greg, tied to what you were saying, and I'll use that guy's voice as well. Just imagine what this team would look like with the first round pick.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, I would flip it and say, maybe imagine them with another cornerback or another linebacker. That's where I'm worried in this game. I'm with you, Colleen and Mark, that I'm not really that worried about the Packers putting up points and moving the ball. I think their offensive line will win battles, and I think Rodgers is just going to – he's just so patient right now. It's crazy that I just can't imagine, unless you're a really special defense, you're going to slow them down. And I don't think the Bucs are that special defensively.
Connie, do you think the bearded boy, Matt LaFleur, deserves more credit than he's gotten? Because, you know, the record speaks for itself. They've now won 13 plus 1 is 14. 14 plus 13 is 14 plus 10 is 24 plus 3 is 27.
Hang on, listeners.
28. 28 wins against 7 losses in 2 seasons. I think that's all right. So the record is great, but also his ability, and there were whispers last year that the offense wasn't exactly where Aaron Rodgers wanted it to be, and they certainly weren't as explosive. But how about this? Some patience. He installs a system that he believes in, LaFleur, and it grows and builds to the juggernaut it has become now. Matt LaFleur deserves more credit for his role in this offense.
Well, I think, too, because, yeah, for sure, because you think about all of the credit that Sean McVay got when the Rams were having all of their success offensively, and it was like, oh, my God, Sean McVay is a genius. He's so young. He's got a photographic memory. It's incredible. Like,
was that RuPaul?
I feel like maybe. Who knows? But I think that Matt LaFleur, like, doesn't really get that same cachet because the difference of Jared Goff and Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers in year two with Matt LaFleur is just so much better than I think anyone could have expected. And it's so hard to kind of pinpoint where the credit should go and how much credit you should give to who, because it's such a collaborative effort. But the offense with Aaron Rodgers is just working so well. And that connection that Rodgers has with Davante Adams is just so next level. Rodgers said that besides Charles Woodson, that Davante Adams is the best player he's ever played with, which is such high praise. And it just seems like they're always on the same page, but they weren't week six. And I think I have to go back and look, but
was coming off a hamstring injury, though. He hadn't played for 3 weeks. And so I think it's like we're getting a different form of him now, right?
100%. I was trying to remember if that was his first game back from the hamstring.
Yeah, that's right. And they got up 10-0 in that game, and then everything went south.
Right. So I think that that's part of the reason why I think things will be a little bit different this time around. But Matt LaFleur, I mean, if the Packers go all the way, even if they just win this week, we're going to be talking about them for 2 weeks. So I think that LaFleur will get his due.
We'll get that.
Now I'm adding more syllables to LaFleur's name after Tom Pelissero did his whole thing on NFL Now about how it's three syllables. Everyone is like pronouncing
Wait,
it wrong.
Wait, so say it right. What is it?
He said it's supposed to be LaFleur. Like
LaFleur.
Well, that sounds like if you really wanted to go into the nuance, that you would say that.
LaFleur.
Unbelievable. Right. Well, now it's like five syllables for me.
So
okay,
it's on the Bolzassons, Greg, to figure out a way to cook up a scheme to slow down this offense. And we saw with Devin White, he kind of led the way last week, and the Vita Vea thing, which Mark brought up, we don't know if he does play, what he's going to give you. He's coming off a broken leg and just came back to practice, but he was one of the top graded interior linemen before he went
he's
down.
He's also, I mean, I would say this, he's bigger than the door I'm looking at over here. I mean, you just put him on the field and you got something to work with. So,
well, yes, perhaps. But Greg, do you think that they'll be able to, Billy Barnwell thinks that they can cook up pressure and heat up Rodgers. I know you've been somewhat critical of their pass rush this year.
Yeah, I don't think Shaq Barrett's been the same. You know, JPP's been okay. They actually were playing. I was wondering last week, should they play this guy Anthony Nelson a little more, who had a couple good rushes, and because they play, you know, Barrett and JPP so much. I think Devin White versus like Aaron Jones is huge. I think the run games for both these teams are so important. It's kind of because LaFleur is sneaky, like a heavy run guy early in games too. It's not just like they get ahead. Like, they are a running team. Their backfield is awesome right now. Like, Aaron Jones is the man, but Jamal Williams to me is one of the best backups in the league, and AJ Dillon's good too. It's like they are going to run, and the Bucs run defense hasn't been as good lately. Defensively, I just kind of think like, maybe this will be wrong because of the weather, but it just feels like there's only going to be so many stops in this game. There's not going to be that many. To me, the Bucs have a few more playmakers where can you make one play? Like, can you just make one big defensive play, whether it's a sack, fumble, or an interception, or whatever it is, to just, you know, give a little bit of an edge in a game that I'm picking is 31-30. But it's like a lot of points either way. Like, and I think the Bucks maybe have those guys. Maybe it'll be Carlton Davis or Devin White or Levante David or JPP or someone, where maybe they have a couple more guys who can make like one big play, even if they're not going to make many stops.
And don't forget what Devin White did for this Packers team, actually, because after that Week 6 game, Devin White told reporters that Green Bay didn't deserve to be on the field with them. I mean, you don't think that Matt LaFleur was asked about it this week. You don't think that that's going to play a part in the locker room this week?
Do you think
week?
They're going to try harder?
It will.
They're going to try harder.
Yeah, I think they're going to try a little harder, a little bit.
Well, hold on. I think Colleen is a point, because you're dealing with Aaron Rodgers, who nothing it sticks to him. And he had a quote also, I love this, because I thought he was shooting an arrow right at our podcast maybe even myself. He said, we got a lot of comments about how we were the worst 13-3 team they'd seen last year. Not getting a lot of those comments this year. So, Woo! Yes, I think some of this stuff does matter, and
directly
I think it does register.
They have been tracking you for a couple of years, and that was about you.
That's why Rodgers did Kyle Brandt's podcast.
How often do you claim that some quote that you throw out there has been tracked by a head coach? It's utterly absurd. We all know it's absurd, and we go along with it.
Got him.
So there, which,
would you like to?
It's so easy, Mark. Sometimes it's fish in a barrel.
Just absurd.
Would you like to issue a statement to Rodgers now that he follows everything you say?
I will say this. The team last year was 13-3. I thought it was one of the worst 13-3 teams I had seen. They got absolutely thrashed in the playoffs. This version of the Packers, I have said for months, I totally believe in.
I thought you were going to lock them up, maybe. You know, you were
That's
talking
who
earlier.
I wanted to. But...
Well, I backed you in the corner. You don't have to go against me. It might be smarter not to.
Look at him telling you what to do.
I'm just saying. Mark. I mean, you don't do whatever you want. Do what you believe.
So much pressure with these locks.
I am doing what I want.
I will be locking up the Packers and riding with them. I locked them up last week. I'll do it again. Doesn't matter, because I'm not in the competition, but I'm a completist. And you said it, Greg, about the running game for Green Bay.
I just read a really good piece by Connor Hughes on The Athletic, who was talking about what Mike LaFleur brings to the Jets offense, the brother of Matt LaFleur. And it is. It's all dictated. The Kyle Shanahan offense, which LaFleur, both LaFleurs, are disciples, is powered off the run, and it's the run that sets up the pass. So yes, that's been an underrated element of everyone is just all zeroed in on Aaron Rodgers, but a reason why this is working is because they have that balance, and that makes things like the play action and all the other gadgets that are built into the offense work that much better.
And I think we should give the Bucs running game a little bit of love. I'm taking the Bucs, by the way. I'm riding this Bucs wave. I look at like the two teams, and I think the Packers defense is the worst group in the game. Now maybe the Packers offense is so much better than any other group that doesn't matter. But to me, I think that's where the most mismatches are. They gave up a ton against the ground. I love the way Ronald Jones runs. He's got a lot of juice. I think he's underrated. I think that's one of the reasons they won last week was they were able to run in the second half. Fournette's running really well. And then you just look at all the matchups. Assuming Antonio Brown plays, which I think is a big factor, especially over the middle of the field, it's Brown and Gronk and Brate and maybe even Fournette in the passing game and Godwin, and it's against all these linebackers who Dan would call ham and eggers, and safeties who are okay in the aren't really that great in coverage. I think there's just a lot of mismatches. That's what I mean, where they could have used that first round pick at cornerback, and these two quarterbacks, there's no one better at adjusting.
We're back with the draft again.
We're back there.
Just imagine what this defense would look like.
There's no one better at adjusting than Brady and Rodgers, and so I think they'll both find mismatches as the game goes along. Brady's numbers in the fourth quarter this year, I went to check because I was it feels like he's just been on fire, are outrageous. He has closed games so well. And this feels like a game where it's whoever has the ball last wins. That's what I'm hoping for, and I think it'll be the Bucs.
Connie, what's your pick in this game? Both games, in fact.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go with, do you want to score too? Just Packers. I'm going to go with the Packers.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go... we don't really know what's going to happen.
We're assuming Mahomes plays,
right? I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I want the Bills to win, though. I don't want to be right about that game.
Then just pick us. Just pick the opposite. Pick what you want. Why not?
Go with your heart.
Nah, I'm in it to win it.
Anybody else have a
There's
thought?
No prize for me.
On this game, Greg, buried in that little notebook that you use with you write with your Japanese pen. Anything you want to empty out before we say goodbye?
Real quick.
Yeah.
Yes.
If Greg doesn't have one.
Yes. And I have a final question for you, Connie, but go ahead.
But I want to hear Connie's first.
Colleen, Greg, and then a last question for
Okay. And mine will be quick. But I was surprised that the Bucs offensive line held up as well as they did last week against the Saints pass rush, considering they were down Alex Kappa and they were bringing in Aaron Stinney at guard for his first NFL start ever. And they did a really good job. So I'm wondering how they're going to match up with the Packers pass rush, considering they went off on Goff. They sacked him four times last week. Kenny Clark was constantly in the backfield. Rashawn Gary is getting better and better. So that could be a matchup to watch.
That was kind of mine. How about that? I mean, I'm with you. I think the two lines should dominate. They're better, but I think if something that could prove everything I just said about the Brady wrong is if Rashawn Gary and Za'Darius Smith go have a game. That's where their difference makers are. The two of them, Gary is playing really well, and Kenny Clark all together. If they could win that matchup, then it kind of blows up everything I said. They're the chance for the Packers defense right there.
Connie, sometimes they try to put you in a box, and I feel that way sometimes as well. If you're the host, and it's you're not allowed to have takes or study things in a different way and share those, but that's what you just proved. Yes, you're a host and gifted, but your ability to analyze the sport and offer takes,
Thank you. You can keep the compliments coming. If you're not done yet, that's fine.
Before you go, I teased it at the top of our conversation. Let's go back to ancient Rome. Mark, I'd like your take on this if you have one as well. You know what? And Greg. That's how we do it.
It's nice.
Swords,
Greg.
Shields.
You're included.
Whatever
swords,
you need.
Shields, sandals, battle, ancient Rome. Connie, you're actually the emperor. You're the one that does the thumbs up, thumbs down to decide whether the loser, the vanquished party, lives or dies. So I want to hear, I guess, your take on that as well. But Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady in a swords, shields, and scandals clash. Who wins?
That's Brady. So much power.
Brady.
Really? You're going to go with Brady?
Why?
I would.
Yep.
Yeah, why would you go with Brady?
I think Brady, like, you know, for all the people that like to make fun of Tom Brady and, you know, the food he eats and all this other business, I think there's something inside of Brady that is, like, will destroy anyone that gets in his way. And I think this season is has a lot to do with that. I think Aaron Rodgers might be, I think he's, you know, a warrior-type player, too, but it's a little bit different. I think that Brady is an assassin, and I see him that way.
Does Brady have the ability, if we're in ancient Rome, though, does he have access to, like, seaweed smoothies and things like that?
Well, how about, like, literally no foods that exist with, like, ridiculous additives and food coloring?
Yeah, he might like it.
He'd be fine.
He might like it.
Everyone else would be freaking out.
I think Aaron Rodgers wins because he's more nimble, and it's not just about power in that arena. Colleen, I haven't heard your answer yet.
I'm going with Rodgers too. I think Brady would recover faster from the whole match, but I think Aaron Rodgers. I don't know why Aaron Rodgers just feels like he could maybe outpatient Brady in their duel. Like he's very. I don't know. They're both so calm and like steely eyed. So I would like to see it, but I don't know. I would go with Rodgers.
Right.
It's like that Survivor slogan: outwit, outlast.
Right. Yeah. I'm with Mark about Mark. I mean, Brady kind of having that cold-blooded nature to him, but it's not like Rodgers is far behind there. I mean, he's pretty pathological too, and so the athleticism I think is what does it. I'm with Dan. The age difference.
He can. You want to lock it up, Mark? Lock off?
I'd happily lock it up. I will say that Rodgers. I shouldn't.
I'm locking up Rodgers
as a non-competitor here because he seems willing to strip himself of anything on some level. If you look at his choices and his history, so too dangerous fight.
Little Olivia Munn callback there, I believe. Hey, Connie. Finally, you're the emperor. Whoever loses, you know, live or die.
Oh, that's it. That's it for you.
Wait,
see,
we're dead?
If you're gonna give me, that power. I'm gonna use it.
You're
gonna
use it.
Otherwise,
savage.
It's gonna be used on me. You know.
All right. Well, there you have it. She is as cold blooded as it gets, Colleen Wolfe. And yes, make sure you check her out on NFL Network. You're all over the place, Connie. I know. If you have any plug you want to throw in before you say goodbye, but you know where to find Connie on the dial. She's a star.
Good Morning Football Weekend every Saturday. Check it out.
There it is. There she goes. Thank you, Connie.
You're welcome.
Bye. Connie Fox leaves us, and we now edge toward the weekend and championship weekend. How fun. Two games left. Only three games left in the entire season, Mark.
I know. It's been an endurance test, but less so than in years past, I think.
This is where we need the Pro Bowl. It is sad. You know, normally it would be four games left. We'd have the big Pro Bowl. Actually, we're usually, like, traveling that day. But
we've
really going to miss that Pro Bowl.
Yeah, but, I mean, we'd watch it later. We'd tape it and definitely watch it as a group.
In past years, it would work out like this. We would be flying into the Super Bowl city while the Pro Bowl is played, and then you check in, and then you go down to the hotel bar, and you see either the games in the third or fourth quarter, or you see the highlights, and you have a couple drinks with some friends, and you catch up, and life's good. Oh, I guess maybe the way to look at it positively is when that setup happens a year from now, we'll just appreciate it more. I'm trying to, like, spin as in this new era for America. I'm trying to now say I understand how things are right now, but things can get better, and there's a good chance they will get better, and I believe in that on a lot of levels, including with our friend Chris Wessling.
I'm with you.
We join you in that hope.
All right, good stuff. All right, we'll be back Friday, tomorrow, on the NFL Network ourselves, the Around the NFL show. Make sure you check that out, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And then, of course, the flagship program where we recap and talk about the two Super Bowl teams and the vanquished parties that Colleen will cold-bloodedly send to the death chamber if she has her way. And if you are overseas, we will be involved with the Sky Sports coverage of Championship Weekend on Sunday. So make sure you check that out. All right. Anything else, boys?
I think that's it.
I think we're good.
This is a good one.
Let's right, roll, good. As they say.
Thanks to Bill. Yes, thanks to Bill Barnwell. Thank you to Connie Fox. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, behind the virtual glass. Until Sunday night.